praises to Allah.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
We draw your attention to verses 54 and 55 of chapter Araf from the Holy Quran, recited by Mr. Ali Asghar Burumand.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Inna رَبَّكُمُ اللَّهُ الَّذِي خَلَقَ السَّمَاوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضَ فِي سِتَّةِ أَيَّامٍ خَلَقَ السماوات والأرض في ستة أيام ثم استوى على العرش يغشي الليل النهار يطلبه حثيثا والشمس والقمر والنجوم مسخرات أَلَا لَهُ الْخَلْقُ تبارك الله رب العالمين ادعوا ربكم تضرعا وخفية ادعوا ربكم تضرعا وخفية إنه لا يحب المعتدين صدق الله العلي العظيم.
In the name of God, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Surely your Lord is Allah, who created the heavens and the earth in six periods of time, and He is firm in power. He throws the veil of night over the day, which it pursues incessantly, and He created the sun and the moon and the stars, made subservient by His command. Surely His is the creation and the command. Blessed is Allah, the Lord of the worlds. Call on your Lord humbly and secretly. Surely, He does not love those who exceed the limits.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Top stories. A Chinese aircraft carrier group sails through the Taiwan Strait a day after a U.S. warship transited the sensitive waterway. Many countries around the world banned flights to and from Britain amid concerns over the spread of a new coronavirus strain. The coronavirus pandemic is devastating Gaza's ailing economy amid the Israeli blockade. We'll have a report from Gaza. Chinese aircraft carrier group has sailed through the sensitive Taiwan Strait on its way to conduct a military drill in the South China Sea. The Shandong carrier group sailed through the narrow strait a day after a U.S. warship transited the same waterway, Taiwan said. It had dispatched a number of warships and aircraft to monitor the movement of the Chinese fleet. Tensions escalated between China and Taiwan after the U.S. approved multi-million-dollar arms sale deals to Taipei last month. China considers the self-ruled island a breakaway province amid, or actually waiting to be reunited with the mainland. It maintains sovereignty over the region under the One China policy. Beijing correspondent Stephen Ribe says China is making a gesture of military strength by sailing its homegrown aircraft carrier through the Taiwan Strait.
What China says is standard in situations like these. It says this is only a routine transit to routine exercises in the South China Sea. That's what America always said when it did similar things. You see, you want to send out a message, which is certainly what China is doing by floating this pride of the Chinese Navy, this huge aircraft carrier, so close to Taiwan. but you don't want to make it look like you're the aggressor. It's interesting, as I said, that it used to be America playing these games with China to intimidate China. In 1996, for example, in response to Chinese troop maneuvers, which were in response themselves to an election being held in Taiwan, the U.S. floated or sailed two aircraft carrier groups up the Taiwan Strait and then said it was just a routine exercise. The individual transit is not that notable in itself. This Shandong aircraft carrier, which is China's first entirely domestically made aircraft carrier, did the same thing last December. What's significant here is the bigger picture. In the old days, America could sail its aircraft carriers, intimidate China. Now that's less easy to do because China is approaching parity with the United States.
U.S. President Donald Trump's campaign has filed a long-shot bid at the Supreme Court to challenge President-elect Joe Biden's victory in the state of Pennsylvania. The bid was made in a petition that asked the justices to reverse the outcome of the presidential race. The case is filed nearly 7 weeks after Election Day and just a month before Biden is set to be inaugurated. It comes as Trump continues to say he has been cheated, and judges around the country have resoundingly rejected his and his allies' allegations of fraud. The challenge follows a similar suit brought by state of Texas, which the justices refused to hear earlier this month. Ronnie Carvalho says even if U.S. President Trump wins the bid, the election outcome will not change.
He's reaching 60. Well, he's with that one would be 58 cases that he's trying to win, and so far he lost all of them. One important thing that I need to mention about that is that the Supreme Court is already out. It won't be back until January 8th. 2 days after the Congress is set to meet and count officially the votes and proclaim the winner of the election. So, and even if he wins this, this another try at the Supreme Court, won't change a bit the result, the outcome of the election. So I strongly believe that everything is regarding money. He's already reaching almost $300 million from his supporters that are donating money. So I think that, of course, the whole idea is to keep receiving money, those donations, and as much as he can push and keep going with that, more money will be coming to his pocket.
The U.S. Senate Republican leader says congressional leaders of both parties have agreed on a coronavirus relief bill worth hundreds of billions of dollars.
More help is on the way. Moments ago, in consultation with our committees, the four leaders of the Senate and the House finalized an agreement. There'll be another major rescue package for the American people. As our citizens continue battling this coronavirus this holiday season, they will not be fighting alone. We've agreed to a package of nearly $900 billion.
The package is expected to include aid for vaccine distribution and logistics, extra jobless benefits, and a new round of stimulus checks. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer also confirmed the agreement, stating that a vote will take place on the bill soon. This comes as the pandemic continues to take a heavy toll on American people, as well as the economy, which has been battered by rising jobless claims. COVID-19 has so far claimed over 317,000 lives out of more than 17.8 million cases in the U.S., the world's worst-hit country. A number of countries have banned travel to and from the U.K. to prevent the spread of a more infectious strain of the coronavirus. The Netherlands, Belgium, Italy, France, Germany, Turkey, and Ireland have suspended or are planning to suspend flights and train arrivals from Britain. A German government official says the entire 27-member European Union could adopt the restrictions. Iran has also announced a two-week halt in flights between Tehran and destinations within Britain. The World Health Organization has called on the European members to step up measures against the new variant circulating in Britain. British health officials say the new coronavirus variant spread 70% faster than the original one and is out of control. The government has imposed the strict Christmas lockdown that is in London and southeast England to rein in the spread of the virus. And now, Britain says significant differences remain with the European Union in negotiations over a post-Brexit trade deal. A senior British government official said talks would continue on Monday to explore every route to find a deal. Previously, the two sides had set Sunday as the deadline for the talks. Negotiations have been in particular stalled over the EU's fishing rights in British waters. A bloc's diplomat said if Britain does not accept the latest offer, then there will be no deal. The two sides must get a deal by December the 31st. A no-deal scenario would mean border chaos for both sides and reliance on World Trade Organization rules that could possibly lead to price hikes. Well, from Brussels, Jerome Hughes says hardline Brexiteers are in favor of a no deal with the EU and willing to postpone trade talks until a later time in the future.
There are hardline Brexiteers, even within the British government, within Boris Johnson's own party, who actually would love a situation where there is no deal at all, so that it would be completely clean break. And that, you know, maybe in the coming years, maybe then they could get round to negotiating a sort of a strict trade deal, so to speak, without all of the other bits and pieces attached. And so there are many people who voted for Brexit and are passionate about getting away from the bureaucracy of the European Union, who would love no deal at all. And actually, you get the feeling sometimes that Boris Johnson is heading in that direction himself, that maybe secretly he doesn't want a deal, because the type of rhetoric we hear from him is very consistent about saying, you know, we will do splendidly without a deal, and we will prosper mightily, I think was the phrase he used, regardless of what happens. You know, it's very impossible to say how it's going to go at this stage, but the point has been made as well that Boris Johnson is dancing on thin ice, in a sense that his closest ally, Donald Trump, is now out of the White House, or soon will be, and it's starting to look like he has fewer and fewer friends.
The coronavirus pandemic is devastating Gaza's ailing economy amid the crippling Israeli blockade. Meanwhile, lockdown measures to control the fast spread of COVID-19 have had grave economic implications. Press TV's correspondent Ashraf Shannon has more.
The coronavirus pandemic has worsened the dire economic conditions in the blockaded Gaza Strip, leaving a huge impact on the livelihoods of people in the tiny coastal enclave. The Israeli blockade in place since 2007 has already caused a sharp decline in the standards of living, as well as alarming levels of unemployment and poverty in the seaside sliver even before the pandemic. Meanwhile, tight lockdown measures to contain COVID-19 have had grave economic implications on all sectors in the Gaza Strip. Experts say the coronavirus pandemic has brought the blockaded enclave's economy to a virtual standstill, driving more Palestinians into poverty.
The economy is a vital lifeline, and the Israeli blockade has crippled this lifeline. The coronavirus restrictions have only worsened the situation. Currently, around 85% of the population live below the poverty line, with an average income of only $2 a day.
Lockdowns are directly affecting thousands of daily wage laborers and their dependents, and resulting in suspension of operations in the vast majority of businesses in the Gaza Strip. The coronavirus pandemic has added to the substantial financial strain already felt by many families living in the Gaza Strip.
The coronavirus pandemic has affected economies all over the world. In Gaza, we're suffering the most amid this pandemic because of the ongoing blockade and the lack of resources.
The economy is in a very bad shape, especially during lockdowns, and shops and restaurants are closed. Many businesses had to lay off workers because they can't pay their wages.
The Gaza Strip has logged more than 33,000 coronavirus infections since late August. In an attempt to curb the rapid spread of the deadly virus, local authorities currently impose lockdowns from 6 p.m. until 7 a.m. and a complete curfew on Fridays and Saturdays.
We have imposed lockdowns as part of our preventive measures to slow the spread of the deadly virus. The Ministry of Interior is sparing no effort to minimize the number of coronavirus cases. The number of infections in the Gaza Strip is very high, and we are trying different approaches to contain the virus.
Experts say the pandemic will exacerbate the underlying humanitarian crisis that has gripped Gaza for years.
The COVID-19 pandemic is adding extra strains on Gaza's ailing economy. all economic sectors in the impoverished enclave are already suffering because of the Israeli blockade and multiple wars. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
In Australia, a new cluster of COVID-19 has spread to over 50 locations in Sydney, prompting all other states and territories to close borders with the city. Authorities have urged the city's 5 million residents to get tested or self-isolate if they have visited the declared infected locations. Nearly 70 cases of infections of the new virus cluster have so far been reported, but the number is expected to increase. Dozens of domestic flights due to leave Sydney were also cancelled. Australia has largely avoided high coronavirus numbers compared to other developed nations, but the new cluster has sparked fears of a wider outbreak. The country has recorded just over 28,000 cases and 908 deaths since the pandemic began. Austria braces for its third hard lockdown, starting on December the 26th and lasting 3 weeks. The government says it will be rolling out free tests for the public after the lockdown, Homolesky reports.
The Austrian government announces a third hard lockdown starting immediately after Christmas on the 26th of December. Chancellor Sebastian Kurz had promised that the second lockdown, which ended 2 weeks ago, would save Christmas. But that mission has proven to be nearly impossible. Like the majority of nations around the world, Austrians are not expecting a regular Christmas or New Year's Eve. But things don't look entirely bleak, as vaccinations are set to begin across Europe and Austria on the 27th of December. With every week, says Chancellor Kurz, we get a step closer to ending this pandemic.
Measures will become stricter until the seven-day incident is below 100, and in mid-January, there will be free mass tests for everyone who wants to take part.
The goal is to keep weekly cases below 100 per 100,000 people. That number currently stands at just under 200. The lockdown is expected to end on January 18th, but only for those who agree to get tested. For those not willing to take the test, the stay-at-home order and curfew will be in place for another extra week. Health Minister Rudolf Anschober expressed concern over the dramatic increase in mortalities across the country over the last 2 months.
With no further measures, at the end of the month, new cases could range between 1,300 and 3,000 cases a day.
For now, the new restrictions mean everyone entering Austria from abroad has to go into a 10-day quarantine, which can only be cut short after 5 days with a negative PCR or antigen test.
Over the Christmas holidays, more contacts and therefore more cases are expected, and the latest preventive measures announced by the government are meant to bridge the time until the vaccine can be rolled out in the new year. Homolesky, Vienna.
A car caravan winds through the streets of Barcelona to protest the controversial school reform approved by Spain's Congress of Deputies in November. Drivers blared their horns while passengers chanted slogans demanding the repeal of a clause that eliminates Spanish as a vehicular language. Kusai Ketri explains.
A nationwide car protest of a Spanish education reform reached Barcelona as the country grappled with a coronavirus pandemic. The procession, organized by a group advocating bilingual teaching in Catalonia, blocked traffic to draw attention to a law that will eliminate Spanish as a vehicular language in education. The reform, known as the FELA law, in reference to Spain's education minister Isabel FELA, was approved by a majority of left-leaning lawmakers in Spain's Congress of Deputies in November. It was hailed as a major breakthrough in promoting equal opportunity in public and concerted schools, increasing funding and access to scholarships, and ending sex segregation. But the main bone of contention is the future of Spanish as a common language across the 17 autonomous regions. The deadlock over school reform takes special significance here in Catalonia, where the pro-independence movement has been gathering pace. Although Spanish is not the main language in most schools in this autonomous region, opponents of the reform say that consecrating a law that scraps Spanish as the common language ends their hopes for equality and emboldens the separatists.
We want to be free to pick the language that better suits our children in school. We've had enough with the language imposition. They do not allow us to speak Spanish here, or our kids are prohibited from learning in their mother tongue, which is Spanish.
On Thursday, Catalonia's Superior Court of Justice stepped in the debate arguing that the teaching of Spanish in the region remains, quote, residual, and it urged authorities to teach a minimum 25% of the curriculum in Spanish, in addition to Spanish class. Education officials in Catalonia denounced the move as a breach of regional competencies and vowed to appeal to Spain's higher court.
The regional authorities in Catalonia have long disregarded court rulings. They've always been quick at trampling our freedom as citizens.
Spain's Conservative People's Party, center-right Ciudadanos, and far-right party Vox have so far failed to slow-walk the bill in its journey to final approval in the Senate. Cusay Cadrip, Barcelona.
The UN peacekeeping mission in the Central African Republic says rebel forces advancing on the capital, Bangui, have been pushed back. A spokesman for the UN peacekeeping forces said the armed groups have left the town and the situation is now under control. The government accused the opposition of an attempted coup after a coalition of three powerful armed groups began advancing toward the capital. Opposition groups want the upcoming presidential and legislative elections to be delayed. The vote is scheduled for December the 27th. That's your world news for now.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en. the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who allowed none to witness when He created the heavens and the earth, and who took no helper when He authored the spirits. He has no associate in divinity and no support in unity. Tongues fall silent before the limits of describing Him. Intellects fail before the core of knowing Him. Terrors fall low in awe of Him. Faces are humbled in fear of Him. And everything mighty yields to His mightiness. So to Thee belongs praise again and again, well measured, continually and methodically. And may His blessings be upon His messenger endlessly, and His salutation everlastingly, eternally. O Allah, make the beginning of this day of mine righteousness, its middle prosperity, and its end success. I seek refuge in Thee from a day whose beginning is fright, and whose middle is anxiety, and whose end is pain. O Allah, I pray forgiveness from Thee for every vow I have vowed, and every promise I have promised, and every pledge I have pledged, then failed to keep for Thee. I ask Thee concerning the complaints of Thy servants against me. If there is a servant from among Thy servants, of a handmaid from among Thy handmaids, who has against me a complaint, because I have wronged him in respect to himself, his reputation, his property, his wife or his child, or because evil words I have spoken about him in his absence, an imposition upon him through inclination, caprice, scorn, zeal, false show, bigotry, whether he be absent or present, alive or dead, such that my hand has fallen short and my capacity has been too narrow to make restitution to him or to annul my obligation to him, I ask Thee, O He who owns all objects of need which are granted by His will and hastened to His desire, that Thou blessest Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, peace be upon them, and makest the one I have wronged satisfied with me in the manner that Thou willst, and givest me mercy from Thee. Forgiveness decreases Thee not, and giving injuries Thee not. O most merciful of the merciful, O Allah, give me on every Monday two favors from Thee: the facility to obey Thee at its beginning, and the favor of Thy forgiveness at its end. O He who is Allah, and none other than whom grants forgiveness for sins.
The summit might look too soon to contemplate the next global outbreak, with the world still grappling with the devastating fallout of the ongoing one. But scientists say it's highly likely that, without savvy intervention, another novel virus will jump from animal to human host and find the conditions to spread like wildfire. As coronavirus pandemic has shown, modern transport can disperse the pathogen to all corners of the globe, in just a matter of hours and spread easily in densely populated cities. We have prepared for you an article written by Silvia Izquierdo. The piece is titled Scientists Focus on Bats for Clues to Prevent Next Pandemic. Night began to fall in Rio de Janeiro's Pedra Branca State Park as four Brazilian scientists switched on their flashlights to follow a narrow trail of mud through dense forest. The researchers were on a mission to capture bats and help prevent the next global pandemic. A few meters ahead, nearly invisible in the darkness, a bat made high-pitched squeaks as it strained its wings against the thin nylon net that had ensnared it. One of the researchers removed the bat, which used its pointed teeth to bite her gloved fingers. The November nighttime outing was part of a project at Brazil's state line Fiocruz Institute to collect and study viruses present in wild animals, including bats, which many scientists believe were linked to the outbreak of COVID-19. The goal now is to identify other viruses that may be highly contagious and lethal to humans, and to use that information to devise plans to stop them from ever infecting people, to forestall the next potential global disease outbreak before it gets underway. In a highly connected world, an outbreak in one place endangers the entire globe, just as the coronavirus did. And the Brazilian team is just one among many worldwide racing to minimize the risk of a second pandemic this century. To some, it might seem too soon to contemplate the next global outbreak, with the world still grappling with the devastating fallout of the ongoing one. But scientists say it's highly likely that, without savvy intervention, another novel virus will jump from animal to human host and find the conditions to spread like wildfire. As this pandemic has shown, modern transport can disperse the pathogen to all corners of the globe in just a matter of hours and spread easily in densely populated cities. According to Dr. Gagandeep Gang, an infectious disease expert at Christian Medical College at Vellore in southern India, it's not a question of if, but of when. She pointed to previous research that found India was among the most likely places in the world for such a spillover event to occur, due to India's dense population and increasing human and livestock incursion into the dense tropical forests teeming with wildlife. It's no coincidence that many scientists are focusing their attention on the world's only flying mammals, bats. Bats are thought to be the original or intermediary host for multiple viruses that have spawned recent epidemics, including COVID-19 epidemic, SARS, MERS, Ebola, Nipah virus, Hendra virus, and Marburg virus. A 2019 study found that of viruses originating from the five most common mammalian sources, primates, rodents, carnivores, ungulates, and bats, those from bats are the most virulent in humans. Bats are a diverse group with more than 1,400 species of bats flitting across every continent except Antarctica. But what many have in common are adaptations that allow them to carry viruses that are deadly in humans and livestock, whilst exhibiting minimal symptoms in themselves, meaning they're able to travel and shed those viruses instead of being quickly hobbled. Raina Plowright, an epidemiologist who studied bats at Montana State University, said, "The secret is that bats have unusual immune systems and that's related to their ability to fly. Cartwright said to get off the ground and sustain flight requires an incredible amount of energy, with bats' metabolic rate increasing 16-fold, adding, "You'd expect them to get cell damage from all that metabolic exertion. But that doesn't happen. Instead, bats are remarkably resilient, with many species living more than 30 years. Highly unusual for such small mammals." Plowright and other bat scientists believe evolutionary tweaks that help bats recover from the stress of flying also give them extra protection against pathogens. Arun J. Banerjee, a virologist at McMaster University in Canada, says bats seem to have evolved a collateral benefit of flight resistance to deal with some of the nastiest viruses known to science. While some scientists are still untangling the mystery, two leading theories are that bats may have evolved what Banerjee called an efficient DNA repair mechanism, or that their bodies may tightly regulate inflammation triggers and not overreact to viral infections. He said probing the secrets of bat immune system may help scientists understand more about when bats do shed viruses, as well as providing hints for possible future medical treatment strategies. Bats and other animals that carry pathogens don't innately pose a risk to humans, unless conditions are right for a spillover event. Kara Brooks, a disease ecologist at the University of California at Berkeley, says, "The virus has to come out of the host for us to get infected." The bad news is that, she says, increasing destruction and fragmentation of habitats worldwide, especially biodiverse areas like tropical forests, means we're seeing higher rates of contact between wildlife and humans, creating more opportunities for a spillover event. That's why the Brazilian researchers chose Pedra Branca Park. As one of the world's largest forests within an urban area, it offers a constant interaction of wild animals with the thousands of humans and domestic animals in surrounding communities. The scientists are studying not just bats, but also small primates, wild cats, and domestic cats in homes with confirmed COVID-19 cases. Ian McKay, a virologist at Australia's University of Queensland, says, "Scientists and governments would stand a better chance of containing future outbreaks if they had faster notice of when and where they begin." Ian McKay says, "Ongoing, constant, non-stop surveillance along the lines of the flu labs set up by the World Health Organization across the globe could help researchers be better prepared." He also suggested that laboratories for virus discovery could regularly sample wastewater or materials from hospitals. India, National Mission on Biodiversity and Human Well-being has been pending since 2018 and will likely be launched next year. Abhi Tamim Banak, a conservation scientist at Ashok Trust for Research in Ecology and Environmental in Bengaluru, said a core part of the plan is to set up 25 sentinel surveillance sites across the country in both rural and urban areas. He said, "They will be the first line of defense." A varied patchwork of virus surveillance programs exists in several countries, but funding tends to wax and wane with the political climate and sense of urgency. Among the most ambitious endeavors in the global Virom project, which aims to discover 500,000 new viruses over the next 10 years. Scientists say one approach that won't help is treating bats as the enemy, vilifying them, throwing stones, or trying to burn them out of their caves. The spring villagers in the Indian state of Rajasthan identified bat colonies in abandoned forts and palaces and killed hundreds with bats and sticks. He also sealed some crevices where bats live, effectively trapping them. In the Indian state of Karnataka, villagers cut down only trees where bats tend to roost. Scientists say those tactics are likely to backfire. An investigation by the U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, and the Ugandan health authorities found that after a mining operation attempted to exterminate bats from a cave in Uganda, the remaining bats exhibited higher infection levels of Marburg virus. This led to Uganda's most severe outbreak of Marburg hemorrhagic fever caused by the virus in 2012. Vikram Misra, a virologist at the University of Saskatchewan in Canada, said, "Stress is a huge factor in upsetting the natural balance that bats have with their viruses. With more you stress bats, the more they shed viruses." Although orders issued by Indian forest officials reiterated the complete ban on killing of wildlife and information campaign to dispel myths were largely successful, convincing people not to attack bats means dispelling long-running cultural assumptions. Hannah Kim Frank, a biologist at Tulane University, said, "People have a lot of misconceptions about bats. They're nocturnal and look a little weird flying, and there's a lot of literature and culture built around bats being scary." She added, "But bats aren't aggressive, and attacking bats doesn't help control diseases. Bats also play vital roles in ecosystems. They consume insects like mosquitoes, pollinate plants, and disperse seeds." Kirsten Lear, an ecologist at Bat Conservation International, says, "We actually need bats in the wild to consume insects that otherwise destroy cotton, corn, and pecan harvests." Hannah Kim Frank says a better approach to minimize disease risk is simply to minimize contact between wild bats and people and livestock. She suggested that research on when bats migrate and when new pups are born could inform decisions about when people should avoid certain areas or keep their livestock penned up. In North America, some scientists advocate restricting public access to caves where bats roost. Kate Langwick, an infectious disease ecologist at Virginia Tech, says, "Cave gating, bat-friendly gates built with iron crossbars can keep humans out and allow bats to move freely." She added, "If we leave the bats alone and don't try to hurt or exterminate them, they're going to be healthier." Perhaps the more significant factor behind bringing bats into more frequent contact with people and domestic animals is the destruction of habitat, which forces bats to seek out new foraging and roosting grounds. In Australia, for example, widespread destruction of winter flowering eucalyptus trees that provide nectar for fruit bats, known locally as flying foxes, prompted the bats to move into areas closer to human settlements, looking for alternate meals, including to a suburb of Brisbane called Hendra. There, the bats transmitted the virus to horses, which in turn infected people. First identified in 1994 and named the Hendra virus, it is highly lethal, killing 60% of people and 75% of horses that have been infected. A similar chain of events took place in Bangladesh, when habitat destruction drove fruit bats into cities, where they spread Nipah virus, which causes severe encephalitis in humans, by licking date palm sap from collection barrels. To potentially reverse the movement of bats, Montana State University's Plowright and colleagues based in Australia are studying restoring the bats' original habitat. Plowright said, Every city in Australia is full of fruit bats that have lost their winter habitats, she added. The idea is to plant new forests and make sure that they're away from places with domestic animals and people. Whether the goal is to curb the spread of known zoonotic diseases or to reduce the risk of new ones emerging as pandemics, the strategy is the same: to reduce contact between humans and wild animals. Ricardo Moratelli, coordinator of the Fiocruz project in Brazil, says, in the history of COVID-19, bats have been more victim than victimizer, adding, bats host a large number of parasites, and they deal with these parasites well. The problem is when human beings enter into contact with them.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Economic divide.
Africa, a huge continent with a huge wealth of natural minerals and resources, and a place that has seen its fair share of exploitation, from colonialism to occupation. The people of Africa have seen their assets bled dry by Western and Global North corporations, so why then is the practice still ongoing? However, there's a devastating side effect to the exploitation of African resources, and none more so than the oil industry, which in Africa sees multiple foreign companies drilling for oil and leaving the local population in a difficult position as a consequence.
We can't see no fish in this water because the water is stained with crude oil. And no living fish can be available to survive with this water. So the oil is polluted everything.
Furthermore, the largest oil companies in the world are solely in it for profits. And of course, with this comes a whole host of court cases that have been raised against the larger oil companies, many of which have seen the MNCs involved paying out compensation to victims, as well as being forced to clean up the mess, something that they rarely do, it seems.
There is no dispute that Shell has polluted these communities very, very significantly. They are living with chronic levels of oil pollution in their water systems, in their farmland, in their every aspect of their lives is affected. And Shell admits that. Shell also admits it's responsible for cleaning up oil, its own oil, and it hasn't done so.
Hello, welcome to Economic Divide with me, Kovat Tafwe. In this week's show, we are proud to bring you another ED exclusive as we cover yet another example of exploitation of African resources in the Kabongo Basin, with the story having been brought to our attention. So let's start off by examining just why foreign oil companies are so interested in getting their hands on African oil. For starters, Africa as a continent is very rich in oil and gas, with an estimated 487.7 trillion cubic feet of gas reserves and around 125 billion barrels of proven oil reserves. Clearly, a good incentive for foreign exploitation, as I'm sure you'll agree. Of the nations in Africa that have such resources, five countries dominate the upstream oil production, with Nigeria, Libya, Algeria, Egypt, and Angola enjoying 85% of Africa's total proven reserves. However, there's also the issue of untapped reserves, and it's hence why Western companies are becoming ever more active on the continent. One such example of this speculative exploration is situated between Namibia and Botswana, encompassing the so-called Kabongo Basin. Now, this area spans some 35,000 square kilometers, and we'll see the operating company based out of Canada drill hundreds of wells across the UNESCO protected land, bringing with it some very serious consequences.
In this exclusive episode of Economic Divide, we were contacted by activists concerned about the ongoing project operated by Canadian company Recon Africa. Recon Africa described themselves as a junior oil and gas company engaged in the development and exploration of oil and gas in the northeast of Namibia and the northwest of Botswana, commonly known as the Kabongo Basin. The company has acquired a 90% stake in the exploration of petroleum in Namibia across an area of around 25,300 square kilometres, as well as obtaining a 100% stake in the petroleum licence of northwest Botswana, covering around 9,900 square kilometres of land. It's been estimated that a total of 120 billion barrels of oil lie underneath the coveted area, an estimate delivered by the leading geochemist Daniel Jarvi of Recon Africa. Whereas there's no doubt that the potential of the oil field is huge in terms of economic advantages for the company drilling, and also for the area, where the creation of jobs will be a key factor. On top of the economic advantages for both Botswana and Namibia, there's also some negative factors that must be considered. One of the main methods of extracting oil is through the controversial method of fracking, which requires huge water resources to achieve. However, based in a desert area, this precious commodity is already something that's hard to come by. Whereas the project's been approved by various authorities across Namibia and Botswana, with an environmental clearance certificate being granted, concerns are also being raised about the land, which is home to around 63,500 San people, a native group of bushmen living in the area, and is also one of the main migratory routes for many of Africa's wildlife, including endangered species, from African elephants to the famous African painted dog. One prominent scientist from Cape Town in nearby South Africa has stated that the project being taken on by Recon Africa is nothing more than neo-colonial extraction of the worst sort, showing how yet again foreign entities are milking Africa of its natural resources.
So, just what are some of the negative effects of oil exploration in Africa? As we know, the impact on water supply is a huge issue, with fishermen already seeing a significant reduction in water quality, which in turn is having a direct effect on the marine life living around the African plateau. Between the years 1976 and 1997 alone, there were some 5,334 oil spills on the Niger Delta alone, equating to some 2.8 million barrels of oil. But add that onto modern-day spillages, as well as those before 1976, it is estimated that some 13 million barrels have been dumped into the Delta, bringing with it a devastating impact on the environment. Politics also play a huge part in the African oil industry. For example, Libya, which is Africa's largest oil-producing nation, seeing its oil wealth dry up following the death of Gaddafi. The nation, which used to rely on oil for 70% of its national income and 90% of its exports, has seen $100 billion lost due to the civil war.
Until its demise following the overthrowing of dictator Muammar Gaddafi, Libya was the leading producer of oil and gas in Africa. However, events took a turn for a worse for the Libyan oil industry, with reports now suggesting that production has all but stopped as infighting continues across the country. In stepped Nigeria then, as the continent's largest oil-producing nation, which in 2019 saw the West African country produce some 2.1 million barrels of oil per day. Nigeria joined the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, or OPEC, in 1971, becoming the 11th nation to do so, and with its current production, sees Nigeria as the 8th largest oil production nation in the OPEC agreement. But like many other African nations, it's the presence of foreign oil companies that sees Nigeria such a popular destination for the MNCs across the world, all keen to get their hands on the precious resource. Yet much like other oil-producing nations in Africa, and in fact across the world, there's a consequence to pay for the production of oil, namely the environment. For many people in Nigeria, natural resources are a way of life, be it through the production of food on an agricultural basis or the fishing of the water surrounding the nation, all are vital for the daily lives of many. Yet, oil production and drilling is taking its toll on those reliant on such resources.
It has destroyed the whole environment. Commercial life in the creek might not be possible. Aquatic life is destroyed.
Whereas many oil companies in Africa claim they're taking precautions when it comes to polluting the environment, the 13 million barrels of oil spilt on the Nigerian coastal waters alone is a legacy of just how bad the pollution and the environmental issue is.
Joining me in the studio in this exclusive episode of The Economic Divide is Ina Shikongo. Ina Shikongo is an activist from Namibia who is fighting to raise awareness of the project that's taken on by Recon Africa. Ina, many thanks for being with us in today's episode of Economic Divide. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Great. So first up, tell us about why you have taken a stance against Recon Africa. I mean, what are they doing to the land in Botswana and Namibia, and what are they looking for?
Recon Africa is a Canadian US company that wants to start oil explorations in the Kavango Basin. They want to start now in December in Namibia, and they are still waiting for the EIA, and then they'll move into Botswana. That's what they want to do.
Well, naturally, from
oil
what you're
and
saying,
gas exploring.
I'm sorry. Well, from what you're saying, the actions of Recon Africa are going to have obviously a devastating impact on the environment, I'm guessing, affecting the people, wildlife, and land of the region. What are some of the effects that we can expect to see from the work being performed by Recon Africa?
My biggest concern is our people, especially our First Nation people, the Sun people, because they are foragers and they are hunters. They heavily depend on the food that is in nature currently. And my biggest concern is when this water starts getting poisoned and killing everything, where are these people going to find the food source from? And our wildlife, yes, they are going to die. Where are they going to go? If they live off the food that is in the fields, if they survive from that water. And there are many migrations that happen at certain times of the year, especially when the rain starts, because the animals or the elephants, they know exactly that is where they will find water.
Yeah, that's very unfortunate. Well, finally, what are the regional governments doing about this issue? There's no doubt that in order for Recon Africa to start work, they would have needed government approval. So why do the governments approve this and why?
Our commissioner at the Ministry of Mines and Energy is the one who approved it. And we don't really know why, because this kind of activity has proven to be detrimental in the global north. Our water belongs to our people, our Namibian people, our people from the Kavango Basin, people in Botswana, in Angola, not only Recon Africa. Why is it that foreign companies have got more rights over our minerals, over our precious resource? Our lives have value. They do matter to us. We are mothers. We are families. We have our own ways. And we do not need this kind of development that is coming to literally exterminate our people. Our lives matter. Black lives matter. And this is what this is all about. Land grabbing by big corporations coming from outside, pretending to come and develop us while they are just coming to exterminate us.
Okay, thank you so much for that. We appreciate you coming on the show. That's Ina Shikongo from Namibia. Again, great to have you. I hope that your work and passion delivers the results that you're looking for.
Thank you very much for having me, and we hope we can stop this.
Hopefully. We'll see what happens. At least we're trying here on Economic Divide. Okay, now, if you'd like to find out more about Ina's campaign or would like to join the protest, or simply just to show your support, check out the following page. It's entitled Frack Free in Namibia, or it's on Facebook.